Chris, the New Jersey Devils have their man, and it's not Phil Housley that is the next head coach of the New Jersey Devils. As Sportsnet's Nick Kyprios reporting that John Hines has agreed to a 3-year deal to become the new head coach of the Devils. Hines coached the AHL's Wilkes-Barre Scranton Penguins this past season. So what do you think of the hire?
Well, I'm afraid I'm a little biased on this one. I worked with John back at USA Hockey when I was there before I started this little writing gig. So I have a little bit of an insight into him that might make me a little bit biased. But I do like the hire. I mean, I can look at it objectively and say that he is an extremely competitive individual. He has a meticulous preparation for games. And also the competitiveness feeds itself into everything he does. He's very detailed. And he has such a great track record of development going back to his time at USA Hockey. You know, he was there, I believe, Patrick Kane was one of his prized pupils when he was there in Ann Arbor. So he's a guy that has kind of worked his way up through the coaching ranks. He's a college assistant at Wisconsin, which is a pro-style college organization. Then having been in pro hockey for as long as he has been, I think he's developed a really good approach, a style of hockey that's more of a defense oriented, but not necessarily one that stifles the offense. So it all comes back to that detail and that preparation. That's just the way that he is and always has been as a coach. And I think this is a particularly good fit for him, especially with the Devils needing to retool a little bit and not having a whole lot of young guys to fill in yet. I think the draft is going to be very important for Ray Shiro to restock their system, which is a little thin right now.
Well, so you look at what he did in the AHL this past season, and he guided his club to the fewest number of goals allowed. But the team also scored goals as well. The club's goal differential was plus 49. I mean, you look at that. I mean, when you see that they gave up the fewest number of goals in the AHL this past season, you go, well, that really fits in line with what the New Jersey Devils had wanted to do and had done in years past.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and I think you talk to some of the guys that have played for him, some of the guys that have played against him, and they'll always say that their goal is to be tough to play against and to be a team where you have to work for all of your goals, and that's been the kind of the hallmarks of John Hines teams throughout his career. I think his teams kind of assume his identity a lot of the time. He's a very, he has a presence about him that really I think will translate to the pros. It's not one that's necessarily, a dictator or anything like that, but it's more of, he's definitely in control. He likes to be in control of those teams. And I think that they kind of feed off of that, do his players. And just, it's, when it comes to the actual defensive style that he plays, it's just more all attention to detail. He had a good goaltender in Matt Murray at Wilkes-Barre Scranton this year and a kid that, got a bright future. But they made things a little bit easier for him because of the way that they would protect their defensive zone. And also just to continue to be that team that's hard to play against, where they have a lot of physicality, but the right kind, not necessarily the go for broke hits, but more, you're going to know that you played that team the next day. So I think that's really something that will be good, because really, if you look at the New Jersey Devils roster, there's not a ton of skill there right now. So you have to kind of make do with what you get, and that all comes back to system play. And I think that's why, his style should be a pretty good fit for the roster as it stands and will grow as the roster improves as well.
Chris Peters, our guest here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Chris, I think what everybody really wants to know is, will Lou Lamoriello be on the bench next to Hines?
Oh, well, I guess you never can tell with Lou, can you?
Yeah, exactly.
Like he's always a few steps down the hall. So, I think I'm interested to see just how much of a step back he's going to take in his new role. I'm sure it won't be a very large step back, but I think that he's kind of easing his way out, and I think he's going to actually love John Hines. It's a very stylistically, this is the kind of coach that I'm sure Lou is going to love.
Chris, looking away from New Jersey and looking at the Stanley Cup final, and maybe New Jersey Devils will find themselves back in that one day, but looking ahead to the Stanley Cup final and seeing that the series that is going to be in, and Dan and I were talking about this earlier on, that, you know, we're looking forward to the series with the Lightning and the Blackhawks, because this is just a series that's just going to be with a ton of star power. You got your Kane and your Taves and your Stamkos. I mean, the list goes on. But looking at the Tampa Bay Lightning offense and what they bring to the table versus the Chicago Blackhawks and really rolling four defensemen with regularity and not much beyond that, can the Blackhawks defense withstand that Tampa Bay Lightning offense?
Yeah, I think that's going to be the great matchup of this series, and the Lightning speed is going to be a huge factor. They have not seen a line like the triplets yet. You know, they have not seen that level of speed. The way that they play in transition. You know, the fact that you've got Andre Palat, who's kind of, I think, if Marian Hossa were looking in a mirror, and you know, he's going to be seeing a lot of himself in Andre Palat. You know, so it's going to be really interesting to see how, especially which forward line Joel Quenneville goes to match up with them. I'm assuming Jonathan Toews is going to see quite a bit of that group. But I think that's going to be a really important matchup as well. How much can those forwards help out that defense, especially when the triplets are on the ice? We've seen them where they've had these kind of, lulls in certain series, but it doesn't tend to last very long. So making those adjustments are going to be so huge for the Blackhawks. I'm not convinced that they're going to be able to wear the Blackhawks defense down. We've been saying that they're tired. They're going to get tired eventually, and they just haven't yet. But this team has the best chance, I think, to wear them down, not because it's so physical, but because of that speed, the transition, and their ability to turn offense on pretty much whenever they want. So it's going to be really interesting to watch.
Chris, if you're Joel Quenneville, who do you put the Duncan Keith on? Like, do you want him with the triplets or do you want him against Stamkos?
Well, the way he's been playing in these playoffs, I think he'll be out against everybody.
he's never off the ice.
I think, he's just this remarkable, I guess, the way he's built, the way that his lungs work, the way that his muscles work. He just never seems to get tired. And I think that's going to be interesting to see if John Cooper's not a guy that tends to really match lines very much. You know, it's not necessarily he's going to get those guys out there, whereas Joel Quenneville absolutely is that guy.
Yeah.
So I don't think he's going to be afraid of Duncan Keith at all. He's just going to try and go at him and see if they can actually be the team that finally figures him out. But as far as I'm concerned, you know, Duncan Keith to me is the MVP for the Blackhawks. But how much he's played, how successful he's been when he's on the ice, the fact he's the second leading scorer in the playoffs for them, all of that adds up to me to an MVP performance. As good as Kane and Taves have both been, I don't think that you could win a series without Duncan Keith playing the way that he has through all three so far.
Is Quenneville going to put Kane and Taves together with regularity or what?
You know, that's another one where I'm really interested to see. I think that that's kind of an in case of emergency situation for him. I think he would prefer to have the balance of the two lines, especially now where they're going to have to probably be a lot more defensive minded against the triplets. So you see more Saad, Hossa, and Taves against those guys. That's to me, I think, is probably the best strategically for the Blackhawks. But if it comes down to it where they're not getting the goals, the offense isn't clicking, I wouldn't be surprised to see him go back to that very quickly. But it took him a while to get there in this last series, so I think it could take a little bit more for him to get there, especially with the ability to match up defensively when you have two great two-way wingers like Saad and Hossa alongside Taves. I just love the way that line works defensively, particularly against the speed and just the ability that the Lightning have throughout their lineup.
Chris Peters, our guest here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I'm Dan Riccio, Jeff Sammet here, Sportsnet tonight until midnight. Chris, I guess the question for the Chicago Blackhawks, maybe looking beyond this series, is what do they do in the off season, and what of the big names goes away? Do you see a Brent Seabrook being able to come back even with the salary cap restrictions they'll be under next year? Maybe a Patrick Sharp goes. How do you see it playing out for the Blackhawks?
Yeah, it's just kind of the way things are working out now. You have to figure that one of those guys that have been the seven guys that have been around for the last two Stanley Cup, you know, one or two of those guys are going to have to go to make room for salary. I think that Patrick Sharp is probably, in terms of, you know, the fact that he has years left on his contract, and it is an expensive deal, but he's an attractive player, you know, four-time 30-goal scorer, you know, has those Stanley Cups and has been an integral part of the lineup. He's kind of on the downward side of his career, and I think that was as evident as it's ever been this season. I wonder how that affects his value on the market, but I'm sure there are plenty of teams that would have a lot of time for Patrick Sharp. To me, I think he's the best chip that they have. Getting rid of Seabrook at this point, as we've seen, the Blackhawks just don't have the depth. And even though they have some young guys in the pipeline, Trevor Van Riemsdyk, Steven John, Billy Koka, guys like that that will be good enough, I don't think that you can rely on them, especially with the fact that Johnny Oduya, his contract is expiring. You can't. I don't see how they can, you know, justify bringing him back, especially if they have an opportunity to put the investment into Seabrook. He's still extremely effective. He has been effective. He'll continue to be effective for a few more years. I think he's the guy that you have to try to hang on to if you're looking, and then that makes Patrick Sharp maybe more attractive to ship out. And then you wonder if there are other guys that are kind of outside the core, like a Brian Bickell, who has an expensive contract, or even maybe Andrew Shaw, and I don't think they'd like to get rid of Shaw. So it's just they have so many options available to them. Not all of them are very good, because it means you're going to lose a good player, but that's the nature of the salary cap, and they're going to have to make some decisions here.
Now, how does this – like, they can't really afford to keep losing players like this, though. I mean, they've gotten away with losing Nick Leddy, but they're going to have to get a better return if they do make some of these trades this offseason, won't they?
Well, yeah, you know, it's – kind of tough though when you're trying to shed salary, and are you going to be able to get guys
that, yeah, what GM is going to give a lot of money or give up a lot when he knows you got to get rid of those players, I guess.
Right. Yeah, it's a tough situation. I think the Leddy trade was a perfect example. It was a straight salary dump where they got some value. I think Billy Polka is probably the guy that's going to be the highest value in the return there, and he's still, you know, a ways away probably from the NHL. So yeah, it's really difficult to make those deals where you're dumping salary and everybody knows that you have to do it and to get a fair return for it. But I think they're going to need to find some teams that are willing to bring back a veteran player, possibly a younger guy that's still on an entry-level deal. That's asking a lot of a team. So yeah, it's going to take a lot of creativity from Stan Bowman to work around these contracts. I don't think that the contracts were a mistake. I think that they're justified. I think they continue to be justified in these playoffs. But it does make things more difficult when it comes to building a complete team, and it's gonna put a lot more pressure too on the Blackhawks to continue to draft well. And you know, we talk about their draft a lot. Hasn't been perfect over the last couple of years. They've got a lot of first rounders that haven't made it to the NHL yet. So it's something that they're gonna have to continue to watch as we go forward here.
Chris, so what about watching in Anaheim what the Ducks are going to do? I don't think it's at a point where they should move on without Bruce Boudreau. I'm not sure he deserves a lot of the blame, but I do have some questions about some decisions that he's made, and he addressed those today here on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, and Boudreau becoming the first head coach in NHL history to lose six game sevens, albeit now with the Ducks team who have become the first team in NHL history to be eliminated at home in game seven in three consecutive seasons. I didn't like Boudreau using a lot of Getzlaff on Taves in game seven when he had used Ryan Kessler throughout the series. I wasn't nuts about that. Some question as to whether or not he was too loyal to Frederik Andersen throughout the series, especially after game five and giving up a couple of bad goals. I didn't think Boudreau made the wrong call at that moment there. But do you think Boudreau is getting too much heat in Anaheim for them bowing out in seven against the Blackhawks?
Well, yeah, I think it's always dangerous when you put so much focus on the playoffs, because they've been three seasons, you know, a bounce here or there. Maybe it worked out for them. They kind of lost the game early in game seven this year, lost it in a similar fashion to the Kings last year. But they've gotten there, and Bruce Boudreau continues to get them there. He's never finished below second place in a division. You know, I mean, it's just ridiculous as regular season success. Now, where the disconnect is in the playoffs, I'm not really sure, but I think that it's worth giving him another opportunity to work it out. I think he's gotten a lot out of these Ducks rosters over the last 3 years, more than I think other people could, and that shouldn't be overlooked. But the fact that there's this futility in game seven, historic futility in game seven, it's concerning. I don't know exactly if it should cost him his job, but if he doesn't get over that hump eventually, that tag is going to follow him forever.
Chris Peters, CBSSports.com's eye on hockey. Chris, it's always lovely having you on. We appreciate this. Thanks for your insight, as always, and I hope we talk again soon and often throughout the Stanley Cup Final. Thanks, pal.
Yeah, anytime. Thanks a lot. All right.